Dora's Dream by Annie Murray. Read by Annie Aldington. Birmingham, 1854. The little girl they called Annie Lunn sat on the bare floorboards amid the other workhouse girls, dressed, like them, in a scratchy, shapeless frock worn over a calico chemise. The child was just 8 years old, and had flaming red hair and stone-grey eyes that seemed to look deeply into a person, when she troubled herself to look at anyone at all. But now she was doing what she did much of the time, sitting cross-legged and staring across the restless young heads around her, out through the window, to her imaginary lands. Despite the dull routine, her days narrow as the inside of a thimble, this was a child whose mind must travel up and beyond. Through the window she floated, her gaze directed out through the veil of filth on the glass, past the smut-coated brick of a chimney, its sharp edges cutting into the sky, and beyond the great smoking, clanging city out there, to a kingdom hidden in the towers of grey-white clouds. Her mind travelled far out of this small life, into the few stories they had read to them in the schoolroom. Princesses locked in towers, fairy godmothers, heroic princes and wicked goblins. And from these crumbs of other people's fancies, she created stories of her own. She flew over the clouds on a swan to a land where anything was possible, to where the earthbound children, and above all adults, around her, could not follow. She had her dreams, and in her dreaming, she was free. Part 1. Chapter 1. Summer, 1858.
"Well, these won't do, will they?"
The matron, Mrs. Hodges, deposited a pitifully small bundle onto the desk in her office. For the first time since the day she entered the workhouse, Annie Lunn was looking at the few possessions she had brought with her. A faded blue frock, with frayed smocking across the chest, and of a size to fit the child of just 6 years old she had been then, was wrapped round a tiny yellow chemise, a pair of brown shoes whose soles and uppers had by now almost parted company, and a hair clip fashioned out of horn.
"We'll provide you with a set of clothes," Mrs. Hodges was saying. "Start you off right. Dr. Gordon is a distinguished gentleman, and the family are very respectable. You're a lucky girl going to work for them, Annie."
As usual, the girl was barely listening. Drifting off was her way, dreaming of adventures beyond the tiny confines of this life. A life of high walls, of bells commanding her to wake or go here or there, of a rumbling belly and smells of thin porridge, of hunger and despair. But in her daydreams, she could fly out over the rooftops. The only time she paid attention was in the workhouse classroom when it came to reading and writing, at which she was outstandingly quick and able. Arithmetic meant nothing. It was a language she barely spoke. Reading and writing, that was where she excelled. But now, for a different reason, she was not listening. She had picked up the hair slide, a gently curved thing with three prongs extending out of a strip of fan-shaped tortoiseshell-coloured horn. Holding the thing, a memory jolted through her. The feel of it, the prongs pushing into her hair. Somewhere else, not here. There was John and other sisters. Mary. Elsie. Not Mary as she had been called in this place. Her mind spun in turmoil. Someone else standing behind her, slipping the slide into her hair.
"There, that looks pretty."
That voice. It came rushing back to her. A voice she had not heard in years. Mother. She had had a mother. Mum.
"The Gordons are expecting you tomorrow," Mrs. Hodges was saying. "Will you pay attention, Annie?"
She snapped back to the present.
"Where's